Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
Live at ESPNAU.com.
Hello and welcome in. It is the Monday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio, Drew at the controls, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com hanging out with us. Bill Cameron will be here soon, but in the meantime, happy to have Brian in the studio. Outstanding access continues for the for folks covering Auburn University athletics as we got to go see a scrimmage this weekend, got to see a lot of practice from Saturday, got to talk with several players today, including Peyton Thorne, including local product J.C. Hart, among others. So yeah, as we close in on the first day of school in just about a week, and the first game of the season in just under 3 weeks now, Auburn and Alabama A&M at Jordan-Hare Stadium to kick off the season. And yeah, it feels like we are on the verge of college football season. Usually SEC Media Days gets that going, and then as fall practice commences, it's right around the corner, Brian.
Yeah, I thought you were about to say it feels like fall, and I was about to argue with you because
it does not feel like fall yet. I mean, it does until you go outside. Yeah. Like it feels like fall, and you know, in the sense that like school's starting back up, and football, you know, there's preseason football, and the you know, college football season is just a couple of weeks away. Does it feel like autumnal outside in Auburn today? No, not at all. It's still. And that was also the case on Saturday, where it was a hot one. You know, Auburn even starting the practice at 10 a.m. or so, it was still a very, very warm afternoon there in the morning and afternoon in Jordan-Hare Stadium for the folks that were able to go. And that's probably good for the team, because we talked to Sylvester Smith today, and he mentioned that the atmosphere, literally the atmosphere, is it feels different inside Jordan-Hare Stadium. The way the airflow, you know, in the stadium compared to the practice field, it can make it hotter, it can intensify things, and that's what was on display on Saturday with the first practice inside the stadium. And Auburn's gonna be playing their first five games of the season in that stadium, so they better get used to they better acclimate themselves to the atmosphere.
Yeah, let me just say the defense came out hot in Jordan-Hare Stadium, didn't they? I think the first team offense didn't really move the ball in its first four possessions, and then Peyton Thorne finally got him going there on the fifth one. And then the first half of the scrimmage was basically dominated by the defense, I thought. And then the second half was dominated by the freshman receivers, who we have talked about, heard about, seen a lot about, and just have really been the story to me of this fall camp so far.
I don't want to react too strongly one way or the other to a performance by a defense or an offense in the scrimmage, because you don't know how that's going to translate to real opposition. They have a quick whistle in scrimmages. You know, I think some of those plays for the Auburn offense might have turned into something productive. But no, it did seem like the defense had the upper hand for much of the work. I was asking, or I was asked by Justin Ferguson about my observations in the scrimmage after I was leaving, and he said, or no, I told him, I mean, you've got at the quarterback position, it feels like there's a calmness or a a sense of organization that is there when Peyton Thorne is out there that's missing when Auburn went to any other quarterback. Things felt a little bit frantic, a little bit disjointed. Seems like with Holden and Hank and even to an extent Walker, you can tell the lack of experience, the lack of reps. And so, you know, there's still a competition. And I'm not closing the book on any of the guys being good college football quarterbacks, but I thought it was, you know, they're You know, there were times on display where it was clear why Peyton is the guy getting virtually all of the first team reps this fall, and in the
scrimmage you get all the first team reps.
Yep.
Yeah, and you know, he was not great Saturday, but you don't want the offense to run all over the defense in scrimmage number one, at least in my opinion and my experience. And defensively, DJ Durkin does not subscribe to the we're going to play base and grade our players on that. He is going to put his guys out there and get after it on defense. And that first team defense for Auburn is pretty stiff, in my opinion. I think they're going to be pretty good. So his numbers, I think, you have to take with a little bit of a grain of salt. And I think with the second and third teams.
No, Keandre Lambert-Smith either.
Right. And I think with the second and third teams, there's a lot of young guys in there. There's a lot of inexperience. There's going to be more mistakes, more guys running the wrong routes or going to the wrong, whatever. I mean, I think there was a handoff. I think it was Hank Brown.
Maybe
it held, but it was Hank. Hank went one way, and the running back went the other way.
And what was funny is Hugh Freeze was on both of them.
So
he was on the running back and the quarterback.
So I don't know whose fault that actually was, or maybe it was both of theirs. But that's just sometimes what you get in the first scrimmage with those second and third teams. But
yeah, either there was a smoothness to things when Peyton was out there that wasn't there when the other quarterbacks were in action, or I guess you could say things felt a little more frantic and disorganized. There were plays where I guess you hear about the lack of consistency, right? You know, it felt like you see in the case of both Hank and Holden, like there are times when they'll make really impressive throws, mm-hmm. and there are other times when
you go, Don't throw that ball.
And there's a desire for both of them. Maybe it's because of the competition element. Yeah. I think there's a desire in both of them to try to keep a play going when mm-hmm. it's lost. And one of the things Peyton Thorne has gained, and it can frustrate people, but one of the things Peyton Thorne has gained with this experience is the knowledge of when to throw it away and when to slide and when to take a sack. And younger quarterbacks may be eager to try to save every single play, and you can turn a ball that should have been thrown away into an interception that way, or you can turn trying to fight out of a sack into a fumble. And so to see, there are growing pains with the other guys, and that would make sense because they haven't, I mean, combined, they really haven't played very much college football at all when you think about Hank and Holden and Walker. So, yeah, I thought there was, for folks wondering, or thinking it was, why is that the case? I thought there were times when it was fairly evident. As for the receivers, I mean, Malcolm Simmons came.
Malcolm Simmons, Perry Thompson.
Ooh. I mean, Malcolm Simmons,
because
Perry Thompson.
Perry
story,
had a 65-yarder or something that didn't count, right? I mean, so, yeah, Malcolm Simmons. And it's funny, those are the two guys that weren't out there this spring. Those are the two newest additions there among the freshmen.
If you look at Auburn future, you got Perry on the outside. You got Cam on the outside. You can put Malcolm Simmons and the slot with his speed and athleticism and jumping ability.
Bryce is pretty good inside at the slot as well.
Yeah,
Bryce might be your first-team punt returner.
It's going to be just impressive. I think it's going to be improved this year. I wouldn't read too much into some of the numbers early in the scrimmage for the first-team offense because I think they'll perform better as the fall goes on.
I also think that one of the things that Hugh Freeze was talking to us about on Friday, where they're doing certain things – and sometimes it's not, it may not be what they really need to be doing against the defense.
Yep.
And like you were saying about DJ Durkin, I think he wants to mess with any offense as much as he can. And that's nothing wrong with that when you have an experienced quarterback who can learn from that, guys that can learn from it. Yep. But the defense was doing a lot more because we saw corner blitzes, safety blitzes. We saw players coming from places we haven't seen at Auburn in a long time.
And this defense, because it's got some inexperience in secondary, might give up some plays.
Yeah.
But they're going to be fun to watch. They're going to absolutely get after it. Keyron Crawford, who I wrote about this afternoon, has had a terrific camp so far and gives Auburn that second pass rusher they really, really needed. Him and Jalen McLeod are going to be terrific on the outside, especially in pass rushing situations.
I like Kieran Crawford. Came away like that. That is a confident, very, very impressive.
I really like it when you see Kieran Crawford and Jalen McLeod on the outside and Keldrick Falk inside.
Yeah, Kieran's
like that a lot.
Kieran's not talking like he's eager to just back up Jalen McLeod this year. He's talking like a guy who's going to have a role. On the, you know, a guy who was a starter in the Sun Belt and left that to come to Auburn, guys like that. I mean, yeah, if there's same with Jalen a year ago, it's like guys like that don't, you know, yeah. If the role they need to have is a backup, that's, you know, that's the way it goes. But a lot of those guys are, you know, they stay in contention for starting jobs, and I wouldn't be surprised if Kieran Crawford is on the field quite a bit.
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised if Auburn gets the best 2 years out of Kieran Crawford. He's a guy who played basketball up until his senior year of high school, and he played 2 years at Arkansas State. He didn't redshirt, so he's just 3 years. He's just only got 3 years of football under his belt, basically. So he's going to get bigger, stronger, faster, and better. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like Auburn's caught him just at the right time where he's really starting to ascend as a football player. So I'd be excited about him and the defense overall.
All right, we're just getting underway, and I'm sorry about that. I had an appointment with our number two sponsors, and it just took a little longer to get back. Yeah, I've got a procedure next Thursday.
So. Oh, not as nice.
Well, but he said it's a simple outpatient. I'll just be sore for a little while, so hopefully we will see. But Bill, Dan, and Brian here, and you can join us as well. We've got a call already holding on the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. That number is 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840 on the Drive text box presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts.
Let's get to the Drive hotline, and Travis is up first. Hey, Travis.
Hey, guys. How are y'all doing today?
Doing all right. Good to hear from you.
I did not go to the scrimmage, so I have no clue, you know, what happened or, you know, the interpretation of it. But I keep hearing how the quarterbacks seem to struggle. I keep reading about how, you know, good Peyton Thorne is and how calming presence he is, but I keep hearing there's some struggles there. And I'm just not quite sure I'm fully sold on Peyton Thorne. I just wanted to get y'all's opinion on that.
Well, I don't think Peyton Thorne is going to be an all-SEC first-round draft pick type quarterback for Auburn. But I do think with better receivers around him, better protection, and an offensive system that better matches his skill set and he believes in, he has a chance to put up numbers close to what he did a couple of years ago at Michigan State, which he threw for over 3,000 yards, and I think it was 26 touchdowns. So I think that's certainly doable for him. I think his best, you know, he's not going to complete 70% of his passes, I don't think, because he's not that type of quarterback. But he's completed 60 last year for Auburn. He completed 60 that 2021 season at Michigan State. But I just think if you watch Auburn this spring, you watch him this fall, with these receivers, there's no way that passing game can't get better because they're just so good.
Yeah, Saturday there, I mean, like I mentioned a while ago, Keandre Lambert-Smith wasn't out there. Cam Coleman was not featured really much on Saturday.
Defense did a good job against
them. They did. But, I mean, I think that the offense the offense was running some things. They didn't really try to line up and run the ball because it was sort of a thud practice as well. It was not set up to be a good RPO kind of offense, which is what Peyton's got to run. Right.
I'm absolutely sold on Peyton Thorne being the best option on the team right now for the 2024 season. Am I sold on Auburn absolutely made the right call sticking with Peyton Thorne instead of
here's your thing. If Auburn hadn't stuck with Peyton Thorne, then you probably don't have the defensive lineman that you're seeing out there right
now.
That's
the question is, if you tried to move on from Peyton Thorne this offseason and pursue a different veteran option, can you do that and still make all of the other roster upgrades that you made? I don't know what the sort of behind the scenes accounting looks like, but as far as go ahead.
I was just going to say that kind of leads me to my next point. Like, it feels like we didn't even try to get any extra competition for him. And, you know, we've paid coaches $15 million not to coach here. I mean, surely we can pay a quarterback $1 million to, you know, come in and I just I don't really understand why we didn't even try to bring in some kind of like Ole Miss. They had Jackson Dart. They brought in a couple high profile guys, and Jackson Dart still ended up starting for him, if I'm not mistaken. I just don't know why we didn't try to bring in some more competition around him. And maybe the finances aren't there. I don't know, but it just seems like there's a lot of money going around. I just didn't understand why we couldn't bring in maybe one other option to try to add some competition to the room. And that's all I had to say, guys.
All right, Travis. I mean, I think Hugh Freeze would be – he's the only one who could really answer
and
this.
And he has answered it before.
I know, but
right?
I mean, he's the only one who could tell you, all right, it's this, it's not that, it's whatever. I think part of it that goes into it is if you bring in whoever it is, then Peyton's probably gone, a backup's probably gone.
Right.
And if it doesn't work out, you're in worse shape than you'd been. But I think you also – it's not that Auburn doesn't have money, but I think he said a couple of times he doesn't want to just completely throw everything out of kilter by going and spending it all in one spot when, man – you look out there, and Saturday, I look at Isaiah Rakes and Philip Bleedy and Kieron Crawford. Mm. I mean, those guys right there up front
make a big difference.
They make a huge difference. Right. And you might not have gotten those guys if you'd sunk it all into a quarterback.
And as the, I mean, as good as it sounds to say bring in a veteran option to compete, do you, I mean, like you said, would you be moving on from Peyton Thorne by bringing in a different veteran quarterback?
Auburn was not going to bring in an average veteran quarterback. If they were going to bring in a quarterback from the portal, it would be somebody they expect to start. Peyton Thorne was going to leave.
Peyton would be gone, and I would say at least one of the other guys is going
to
be gone.
And it sounds like Hugh Freeze wanted some continuity, right? It sounds like Hugh Freeze wanted to see what a second year – and you can argue, you know, Auburn should have brought in someone with experience to challenge Peyton Thorne for the starting job. I totally get that. It sounds like Hugh Freeze thought the best way forward was to give Peyton Thorne, you know, give Peyton Thorne a chance to prove that he's the best option in house, and then if he is, give him as many first team reps as possible to maximize what he can be, because a lack of reps might have been part of the problem last year.
And you know, I mean, a lot of the guys that you were looking at, the Peyton Thorne's numbers at Michigan State would have been, wow, let's get that guy and bring him in.
Yeah, right.
You know?
And we've seen that second-year transfer quarterbacks tend to do much, much better than they do in their first year.
Sure. And, of course, Peyton didn't go through spring ball last year.
Right.
I think a lot of people expected, all right, we're going to see Peyton's going to throw for 300 yards. If he's that much better, he needs to throw for 300 yards and four touchdowns on Saturday. And it just wasn't set up.
Well, if you set him up against the second-team defense, I think he probably could have. But you didn't, and that first-team defense is pretty good. But while I'm defending Peyton, I'll also say that he's got to get the ball down more with these receivers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Cam Coleman cannot go into a scrimmage.
No, we saw a couple of times
targets.
Well, we were sitting there next to each other, Brian, and there were a couple of times the ball was thrown down the sideline and ended up out of bounds, and you saw a great catch by Perry out of bounds, and who was the other one? There was another one.
Cam caught one out of bounds.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. When you have those kind of receivers, throw the ball in bounds.
Exactly.
And Peyton, I think, talked a little bit about that today, didn't he?
I was not.
I saw Stoltz's video, and you were sitting in there, Dan. He was talking about with Cam, you've got to throw the ball up and expect them to come down with it, and that's something he needed to improve on that he should have done, I thought, Saturday.
And I think he will, but I still need to see it. I think everybody wants to see that, right?
All right. We need to get to our first break. James, hang on. You'll be up when we come back. We're just underway here on the Monday Drive.
ESPN 106.7 and 4.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Monday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com, Drew at the controls, and James is next on the drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. Hey, James.
Hey, how you doing? Two rule changes this year. One, don't spend any time on it, but did not the pros do away with that silly fair catch on kickoffs?
Did the NFL get rid of fair catch kickoffs? I didn't hear.
I had not heard that.
Yeah.
The NFL kickoffs do look different. I know that.
They did away with it. You know what I'm talking about. The other is, explain to me all now about the earplug or what it was we're going to be talking to the quarterback. If you're going to talk to one player on the field, I'd rather be talking to my cornerback every time, tell him when to look around. Explain to me about the thing in the quarterback's ear. Okay.
I mean, sure, that's basically the same thing that you've seen in the NFL, where somebody is able to get to the quarterback. Now, it stops. Is it 15 or 20 seconds before the snap?
I think it's 15.
Yeah, so there is conversation. They can be talking to the quarterback, but they can't be doing it like, oh, you know, look out on your left side. You know, watch out, somebody's about to hit you or anything. So it's a way to prevent any more of the stealing signals and you know, the things like that. Now, it sure seems like there are people that are technically smart enough to be able to maybe figure out how to break into the signals, but that's the idea, though, James, is to be able to. Now you won't have to be seeing all the signs and the signals and everything from the sidelines.
Oh, okay, that's not that complicated. See? But like I said, what do you think about my idea? I want my cornerback to be able to talk to
Oh, me. Yeah. I mean, sure, in a perfect world, you'd love to be able to have everybody have something in with their position coach. Then it would really be who's got the best talent, because nobody would ever bust a play. It would always be, look out, here comes somebody from whatever side of the field.
Yeah, that's all. Thanks a lot.
All right, James, good hearing from you. 334-321-1390. And John is up next. Hey, John.
Hey, guys, I had a comment on something I saw with the NFL kickoff rule and just my own personal theory on Peyton Thorne real quick I wanted y'all's thoughts on. First of all, with the NFL, there was a weird play, I don't know if y'all saw it, in the Chiefs-Jaguars game this weekend where there was a kickoff that landed in the end zone, bounced back to the one-yard line, and I think it was a Hardman for the Chiefs was in the end zone, reached out, picked the ball up at the one and took a knee, and that's a safety. So I wonder if the NFL will change that rule and make it like college where the ball is dead if it enters the end zone.
It would make sense. I mean, either dead or, hey, it's you know, it used to be it was live no matter where it was, and the defense could fall.
And I believe last year was the first year in the NFL that they did use the rule that if the ball touches – like if a kickoff goes into the end zone, it's a dead ball the moment it touches in the end zone. They've changed that rule. It's a live ball this year, and I guess Miko Coleman didn't get the Miko Hardman did not get the he did not get the memo about the rule change.
But it was interesting. Jacksonville scored 10 points, got a touchdown, a 2-point conversion, and that safety with no time coming off the clock. So you don't see many 10-point plays in football. But, hey, a quick question, just my theory real quick on Thorne. I think the offense was so badly operated under Philip Montgomery last year that I think Coach Freeze, being probably too honest for his own good, I think that was part of his reason to bring back Thorne, was to give him a fair shot, and he didn't think he had a fair shot in a Montgomery offense, which I thought kind of played out because Philip didn't even get an OC role in college. He went to the Birmingham USL team.
Yeah, there may be a little something to that. I mean,
we wondered about them, you know, marrying the concepts of what Hugh Freeze's offense have traditionally done well with what Philip Montgomery's offenses had done well, and it did seem like you had, you know, it's like, you know, some people, you know, if you really like pizza and you really like peanut butter and jelly,
want a peanut butter and jelly pizza.
Doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be able to slap those things together.
It was doomed from the beginning, wasn't it? When you look back on it, you just knew this was.
I think there are people that wanted him to be the head coach and, you know, not get back into the coach calling plays, but he's got to do what he does.
Yep. That's his specialty.
And I'm sorry, guys. I think Montgomery not getting another coaching job in college is. I think that's really telling on what the word is in coaching circles. Because all these coaching trees intersect.
I have no idea what the USL what the UFL money is like. I mean, I see what you're saying. Although he also, you know, sometimes coaches.
He had a multi-year deal here, so he's still getting paid.
Exactly. Sometimes coaches, if they go elsewhere other than college football, get the entirety of their college deals and some extra money from their new pro job.
He's not hurting, I wouldn't think.
Well, that I hadn't thought about that aspect of it. Thank you, guys. Y'all have a good one.
Hey, appreciate the call, John.
Isn't that correct in the industry? Like, if a fired coordinator takes a college job?
Well, usually, I don't know what everybody's contract says, but there's usually wording in there.
Remember when Arkansas was trying to get Bielema's buyout back? And it was like, he's not trying to get a college job because of his buyout. And he was like working as a, not a volunteer, but he was working for the Patriots in like an analyst position that paid considerably less than a college coordinator job or head coaching job.
When you're getting your millions something from your college, well, I wouldn't try too hard either.
Sure. And then the moment the Arkansas money dried up, he got a head coaching job again.
All right. We'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Love for you to join in here on the Monday Drive.
7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive, 25 minutes away from 5 o'clock here on this Monday afternoon. Bill, Dan, and Brian here in the studio. Drew at the controls. The only thing I missed was when I was getting out of the car and coming in. Any other thoughts, Brian? I mean, just some of the highlights in your mind again. It wasn't a full speed scrimmage. It was thud. They weren't doing. I didn't think they were. They weren't able to really run the RPO. They didn't really try to feature the run. But it was obvious. I mean, there were some guys that were just obvious that they're going to be contributors this year.
Going with some guys that maybe have been talked about. Taz Magoo, I thought was good. Made a 41-yard field goal. Made a couple of long extra points. I guess they.
Why didn't he kick it first?
I don't know. I don't know what's going on there. But looked terrific out there.
Oh, yeah.
And Auburn's probably going to have to depend on him at least early on. We'll see how Alex McPherson.
Ferg was raving about Gabe Russo, right? Was that the
–
He had
a couple of great punts, yep. and then he shanked one.
Yes. Yep.
And that's what could keep you from being a regular punter is you need to be consistent. Oh. You'd rather have somebody that could kick it 37 every time with good hang time than a couple of 55s and then a 15.
I'll tell you what, though. If you got a year before you're the starting punter,
oh, yeah.
I'll take a guy who can do 55. You know,
he can boom it.
Yeah,
no
and you know, maybe he's got a year to work on the control.
Well, I think he should, unless something happens to Oscar.
Yeah.
Auburn's in pretty good shape.
You know, we got a wild thing situation there with the punter where, you know, maybe Russo's got, you know, he's got the big leg and he's going to work out a way to reel it in.
They do have a commitment from a player for next year. So
yeah,
there'll be some competition. I was very intrigued by, not that it means everything, but it tells you a lot of what the impression that Malik Blockton has made for him to be out there with the very first group on the very first series.
Doesn't mean he'll be starting game one, but it means he's going to be playing.
You know, and you think about Auburn true freshmen that have worked their way into the rotation in the last 5-10 years at the line of scrimmage on defense, and it's names like Derek Hall and Derek Brown.
Yeah,
so
pretty good players.
Yeah, so I mean, so it's like, so I would think Marlon Davidson.
Amaris is playing too, and he's playing a lot.
He is.
I mean, so I think that's a.
Yeah, he looked pretty good. Jamonta Waller had a couple of plays.
I like a lot of the
new faces on defense.
How big
Kieron and Kieron Crawford, Jalen McLeod look great on the outside.
Isaiah Rakes is an impressive guy there in the middle.
You think it's 6-7 guys for those two spots inside? Like, is that how big the rotation
is?
Because they've got, and what's amazing is there was a time not all that long ago where that would have been impossible with scholarship players.
There was a time not long ago where there weren't 6-7 guys for four spots.
Yeah, and now you've got. I mean, looking whoever's first up, is it Rakes, Jason Jones, Trill Carter?
I think it's probably Rakes and Gage.
It's Rakes, Isaiah Rakes, and Gage Keys. Although you're going to see Philip Bleedy Jones and Trill Carter and Bobby Jameson
and
Travis
and Malik
and Malik
and Zykevious. Like I mean, it's
Zykevious is out there again.
Yeah, he's you're right. Yeah, well, Zykevious and Falk could both be slide inside options on passing downs.
That's true.
But you're right. They're probably more on the outside.
Yeah, that was seven guys for those two spots inside.
We didn't mention DJ Reed.
No, you're right.
Or Lindsey.
No, you're right.
And I think Lindsey's probably both.
Yeah, he plays end and tackle. Yeah, but it's great to have that kind of depth.
I mean, it's still a question of, I think, at both receiver and defensive line, like, rotations are great. Part of the reason you're using a rotation is to keep your best players fresh. Who are your best players? Like, who are the guys when, you know, who are the guys that you want out there when the game is on the line? And I think Auburn's still figuring out which defensive line is going to represent, I don't know, Bill, the A-team? Like, who's, you know what I mean? Like, which defensive line do you want out there in the...
Yeah, I think it may just depend on situation matchups, down and distance.
You feel like McLeod and Falk are on the A-team.
Yes.
And then then it's a matter of which guys, you know, who's Mr. T and who's... And
I think Rakes is moving up to the A-team on first and second down for sure, and then it changes on third and long. But
I think short yardage, yeah, you're going to have Jason Jones is in on short yardage.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Jason also, he's moving a little bit better, I thought, than in the past. It's a great situation. I thought the linebackers looked pretty darn good,
too. I would have guessed Bleedy as a maybe a A-teamer after the first 2 weeks. But you're right. It does feel like it's very – the margins are very thin there.
Yeah.
And you mean Blockton and
Keys, too.
Keys and – I mean, they've got a ton of guys there on the inside – to figure out which guys represent the A team. And linebacker, it feels like there are fewer candidates for a bunch of snaps.
Fewer, but I'd say there are four guys that they feel pretty good about right now.
Is Woodyard one of the four?
Yes, he is.
Yes, he is.
Yes, he is. I think he and Dorian Massey are the are three and four right
Dorian
now.
Dorian feels like your next linebacker up if something happens to Asante or Keys, and Robert Woodyard could very well have a bigger role. And you know what? And
they also brought in the guy late, Finaje
Gote,
right?
Yep.
Who can figure in there too?
He was in there, but I mean, we saw
Riddick.
Yes, we saw DeMarcus Riddick in the backfield a couple of plays.
Yes, we did.
The story with a guy like Woodyard, who did not have did not make a huge impact on last year's team. It could be, if he ends up playing a big role on this year's team, it could be reminiscent of Asante. That's a guy who, granted, wasn't a transfer, but, well, I guess, no, Woodyard wasn't a transfer.
No. He was
third year, and he basically hasn't played.
Yeah.
He was injured his first year.
Right, had a bad injury.
And he's dropped about 10 or 15 pounds.
Yeah, needed to get in shape, just really needed to put in a lot of work, and he has. It's clear he has put in a lot of work, and it looks like this is going to be the year where he has a bit of a breakout year.
Yes, and he's had a he's had a chance to work his way from the bottom of the depth chart into maybe playing a big role on this team. I would expect to see him, certainly expect to see him on special teams. And then there's also the chance that he's one of your top three, one of the top four options at linebacker.
Now, Keontae wasn't out there Saturday. He should be fine. I mean, so there was no Keandre Lambert-Smith. There was no Keontae.
Who started at cornerback opposite Kite? I didn't know.
I believe it was Spooty Kite was the other.
It was Canley and Kite.
Yep.
Were the two starters.
And somebody was it Sylvester Smith talking about Kite and just raving about the last couple of days of practice.
Well, remember the other day he was like he needs to go ahead and make that move, and apparently he did. He may have heard that because he went out Friday and had a great practice, and he looked really good Saturday.
I believe they've known each other for a long time too. Sylvester Smith mentioned that because I think they're from the same part of the state, and they've known each other for a really long time. He was vouching for the work. He says, you know, nothing against Kayan or Champ or Keontae, but people need to recognize the Auburn's got another one there in Spooty Kite.
I really think that I think folks are going to be pleased with J.C. Hart too.
Brian got to it. Were you there when
I was.
You were there filming J.C.?
I was, yes. We already knew he's terrific, really academically oriented. And
he's not a little kid either.
No, he is. He's put together. I mean, he's legitimately 6'2", over 200 pounds, has the speed and athleticism.
They say he's the fastest guy on the team.
Yep. So good to see him make
moves. After seeing Malcolm on Saturday, if you're the fastest guy on the team, I'm very impressed.
Yeah, no kidding.
I'm very impressed.
Did he say why he's been wearing the yellow jersey? I just wondered.
Was it his shoulder? I think it was his shoulder, maybe. Is that the right? But I don't think it was anything serious. It might have been a different player, but I think it was.
Because he was the only player that early on you had Jay Crawford. No, who was it? Who was the other? It was Amon Lane, wasn't it? Mm. that was also wearing a yellow jersey but then took it off, and J.C. kept his on. But, I mean, he's a big guy that really moves
well. Does it seem like Lane is a year away? Because we talk more about Kite and J.C.
Well, he's a true freshman.
Yeah. We talk more about Kite and J.C. and even Jay Crawford
as
options competing. I'm not writing Lane off, but
people. Well, the thing you've got to remember is he's a guy that wasn't here in the spring,
coming off an ACL too.
Yes,
yeah, right.
So
he's probably going to be a red shirt unless they have to play him, and he's probably on the same path as J.C. Hart because he is a big, tall guy who could play corner or nickel or maybe even safety. We'll see. Right.
J.C. and Sylvester redshirted last year and could be playing pretty big roles on the defense this year.
334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar, and Steve is up next. Hey, Steve.
Hey, so I was there, and it was interesting just to see what the team looked like. I mean, it looks like a bunch of SEC football players for the first time in a while.
You're not kidding.
You know, size, I mean, you know, 22, I guess that's Ray, coming off the field with his helmet off, and that's one big dang man.
So it is it's the biggest guy I've ever seen wearing 22, I can tell you that.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's weird. And speaking of that, you know, there's a lot of double numbers.
Uh-huh.
I got to thinking, I had to actually look at the roster. If I had to bet on the double number for the most athletic double number, it would be 16 between Malcolm and Reddick. I mean, I watched Reddick, and I saw a little Carlos Dansby and a little Andre Bruce. I mean, that guy looks like he can play wide receiver.
He really moves well. Yeah, that's what caught my eye was just how quick he is.
A tremendous athlete in high school,
Even in warm-ups, he just was – like, you know, on skates, he was just really, really smooth. So, yeah, I guess I'm just getting old. It was fun to watch all that. And then, of course, halfway through it, I'm going, well, you know, next year half these guys may not be here because somebody will offer them a little more money in their league. But, I mean, it was impressive just to physically see them. And also one other thing that I thought was great was there was a whole lot of coaching going on. And DJ Durkin – he was not happy with Hugh at one or two times for some of the things they gave tackles that what he didn't think were tackles, and then he let one ref know that, you know, Jeremiah Cobb didn't score on one play. But I don't know if
he's very colorful and lively and energetic, isn't he?
Yeah, well, y'all were talking about the running game. There was a toss sweep to Jeremiah that was blocked absolutely perfectly, and I don't know who the defensive back was. He got a little bit of a hand on him, but in the game, that was house. He was 80 yards for a touchdown on that play because everybody was on the ground, and it was Jeremiah and that one guy, and he wasn't going to get him. But, I mean, you can't see much from a thud practice. You cannot. I mean, it's unfair to judge anybody by it. I mean, you know, there were times the guys picked up 6 yards and they spotted it. I think they may have been doing it intentionally. It looked like they – moved it back so instead of second and four, it was second and six or second and six, it was second and two. So, I mean, I honestly made it to when they started actually tackling to the ground. But it was just good to see the amount of athleticism and size. And, you know, you can't hear anything, but you can see it. Just in body language, it looked like units were together and people were coaching. And it just looked very hopeful. Let's just put it that way.
It's definitely looking more like an SEC team. Not quite there. I mean, it's an SEC team, but, I mean, like an SEC really, really good team, right? Auburn's starting to look like that.
Yeah, there are more players like that now. No question.
And you give Hugh Freeze and his staff a couple more years, and you're going to be amazed what that team looks like and what that roster looks like. It's an exciting time to cover Auburn. And to follow Auburn, I just think they're really on the rise. I think they can take a step forward this year and take some big step forwards in the next 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, well, it was impressive. And I think they're going to have a hard time keeping Malcolm Simmons off the field. And those four kids, they're going to be pushing everybody in front of them. And that wide receiver room could end up being really, really good because it's not like it's been the past few years. If you can't get open, if you don't do it, you're supposed to do, there's people behind you that are as good, if not better than you, and you'll sit down. And I think that's the point they're trying to make is, I don't care what class you are, we're going to play the best player. And those four kids looked like they were trying to figure out a way where they could all start together 4 years out.
Yeah. And I just thought about this, and I'll need to think about some more, but I'm not sure if there's a position, and they got to go out there and prove it, but I'm not sure if there's a position in my 25 years covering this team that's improved as much as wide receiver is. That's potential right
now. From 1 year to the next?
Right. That's potential because they were really bad last year.
Yeah, you're right.
And they could be somewhere between good to really good or great this year. We'll see.
Yeah, there may have been a year when we bought in a bunch of defensive backs. I don't know if it was when we bought all that Dillard five in, there were a lot of defensive backs in that, and Frank Sanders, I guess. But yeah, I can't. As far as freshmen going, there may not be. Well, in Auburn history, there's never been a better class of receivers than this. If it pans out,
So far, so good. I mean, they don't look like any duds. I can tell you that.
I wasn't covering the team then, but Rudy Johnson was a heck of a
yeah. I was thinking about that too.
Running back.
Auburn couldn't run the ball at all in '98, and they could when Rudy came in. But that's not a whole room.
Yeah.
I mean, he pretty much filled up the room. what were you saying, Steve?
Hey, one last thing. Watching Perry Thompson catch punts just made me smile.
Yeah,
he catches them naturally. He's a big guy. Everybody says how dynamic he is with the ball in his hand. I don't know if they're doing it. But the fact that maybe he's trying to get a chance to get the ball in his hand, you put him returning kicks and Cobb returning kickoffs. I mean, those are the kind of explosive plays we just haven't seen. I mean, we have not seen him in a while. And they may not put him back there. He may not be the choice. But, you know, you can see a guy catch a punt and realize whether he can do it or not, and he can do it. He's just a natural catcher of the football. So that's just another thing I noticed.
Yeah, good point, Steve. Hey, appreciate the call.
All right.
Yeah, it is. You're not used to seeing somebody that big back there. And you may not realize it when he's just standing there. When you're way away in the stands and you're seeing somebody on the field, you may not go, oh, you may not realize how big he is. That is a big dude.
Most athletic pair of guys sharing the same number on the team this year. That's an interesting
thing. That is a good one.
I mean, if I ranked all the receivers I've covered at Auburn.
I mean, zero isn't bad.
Yeah, Keontae and Damari.
With Keontae.
All the receivers I've covered at Auburn, I'm not sure that Cam and Perry – and Malcolm, and we'll see what Bryce can do too, might be among the top five.
Yeah, see, Malcolm is the guy who was sort of the sleeper.
Right.
You know,
he's the guy that Auburn would sign, and he turned into a really good player.
Yeah.
Although he may turn into a really, really, really good player, right? It's just an incredible group.
I mentioned it on the Observer podcast, but with Malcolm Simmons, like, you can tell. I mean, and I was already on alert because of the story Hugh Freeze told the Friday podcast or the Friday press conference about – you know, Malcolm taking the sweep and going untouched in the red zone drill.
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, just in pre-snap motion, he's moving at a different speed than other receivers, right? Like, you can tell just when he's cutting, you know, in pre-snap to change direction and stuff that you're dealing with a different kind of, you know, different kind of athlete, different kind of track speed. That's wild to think.
Well, that speed sweep is going to make defenses have to account for it. When they put him in motion or however they're going to use it, you know. Mm-hmm. We saw that with Gus back in the day with who was that little running back that was so quick? I was thinking about him. But, you know, it's not going to work every time, but it puts a lot of extra pressure on the defense when you have athletes that can do those type of things.
We'll get to our final break of hour number one. Come on in and join us here on the Monday Drive.
Hey, y'all.
Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Final minute or so of hour number one here on this Monday. We'd love for you to join us. Again, you can call us on the drive hotline. You just heard that number, or text us. We were fortunate. We were there at practice on Saturday. It was not a full scrimmage, but they got a lot done, even though, as Steve was saying when he called a few minutes ago, I mean, it's hard to tell when you have a lot of thud practice.
Right.
You have a lot of quick whistles,
yes.
As he said. I mean, there were some plays where you know, defenders could have blown up players a little more, or offensive players could have broken a tackling off for a lot more yards.
If you basically get a hand on a running back, he's down.
Yeah.
You're not going to stop Jarquez Hunter with a hand.
Any of Auburn's top three running backs.
That young man can get downhill like quick.
I would say you probably wouldn't stop Sean Jackson with a hand.
No. Take old arm and hand.
Yeah, no kidding. That arm, that hand will be on him downfield.
Yeah.
All right, we will get to our top of the hour break. We'll get to Brian's Monday musings and more. Love for you to join in hour number two, which is coming up.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in. It's hour number two of the Monday Drive. Hope everybody doing well and had a good weekend. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com here in the studio. Drew at the controls. Hour number two of the Drive brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic. Saw them today, as a matter of fact. East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika. On the web at orthoclinic.com. And we'd love for you to join in. Got quite a few calls. You can tell we're getting closer. It is just 19 days until the first full weekend of college football, which will include Auburn and Alabama A&M. And, you know, I heard you guys talking about it. No, it doesn't feel like fall, but it feels like the start of football. This is the kind of weather we have at the start of football. It is hot. It is humid. And where were you Saturday, Dan?
I was in the sun, actually, Bill. I took about an hour and sat. I was a few rows in front of you guys in 11.
We sat in some scully seats in the shade.
And then Bill, and then after about an hour and realizing I'd gotten a little too much sun, I decided an hour and a half or so, and I was like,
you know what,
the tunnels were very cool.
There's usually a breeze.
And once they started scrimmaging ones and ones and twos and things, you had an excellent view from the tunnels. So you had to stand a little bit, but you had an excellent. So I spent the last 30, 45 minutes or so of the practice in there. But
I felt for anybody that was in the sun. There were some people. I mean, the thing is, there was enough room. There was enough room for people not to have to sit in the sun.
Yeah, Peyton came in today looking like George Hamilton, right? Because of the way the sun was pressing down
that's
on us.
That's old school, right there.
For you kids out there.
What were your takes? What did Peyton have to say?
To me, the big three takeaways from the scrimmage. One. Not trying to promise that he's going to have some, you know, the Heisman national championship season or anything like that, but it does feel, it feels settled down for Peyton, and I think it comes through not just during the play, but pre-snap and in some of the even some of the post-snap interactions with his teammates and stuff. You know, it feels you get that sense, and I am curious to see how much of the you can't really evaluate RPO stuff with a quarterback in a scrimmage with a quick whistle.
No.
I don't know how many of those were.
And I don't think they wanted Peyton keeping the ball anyway, and he did one time, and it was just such a huge hole that he could run for 15 yards.
You know what they did a couple times, which I hadn't really thought about, but the more I'm like, oh, wow, that could be, is when Peyton, you know, the RPO aspect of Peyton being able to pull it back and immediately find Rivaldo for something short, which they did a couple of times. We didn't really see Rivaldo. You think about this. You didn't really see Rivaldo after the catch much.
No.
His first year. You saw him make plays, win jump balls, and get open in the end zone and stuff like that, but you didn't really see him catch it and then have the option to make some guys miss and get down the field. You feel like he can do that. The athleticism is there for Rivaldo to be an after the catch weapon, and I think there could be more of that in year two of Peyton and Rivaldo as teammates together. I'm excited about that. At receiver, it's full of juice, right? The receiver room right now, especially the freshmen, just seems like between Cam and Perry look like potential aces.
They don't just look like SEC players. Those guys look like NFL receivers.
That's a pair of aces that you may have just been dealt. And then you've got Malcolm Simmons, who, Hugh Freeze said he was like a Jet, on Friday, and you're like, yeah, whatever. But and then you see it, and it's like, oh no, this is a it's. I mean, and I guess you remember
who overthrew him.
Which one?
Probably Hank, because Hank's got a huge arm.
Because you even commented, you went, "Ooh, it's hard to overthrow him."
Yeah, I don't remember. It was either
somebody overthrew him. He was running wide open.
Yeah, no, and the reason I'm guessing Hank is because Hank's got the biggest arm of the three, and I think it would take a big arm to overthrow.
I
but maybe
disagree.
It
was. I think my feeling is Hank probably has the weakest arm.
Really on deep balls and stuff. I was thinking Hank of the three guys competing.
Hank sort of throws under when he throws. He throws like he's got a little. Like almost a.
But I feel like, especially this fall, maybe we've just
maybe
seen.
He gets it.
Maybe we've seen him throw for distance more than the other two quarterbacks.
Maybe it's just the power. I think there's more zip.
Yeah.
From the other guys.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. I've seen Hank.
But he can get it downfield.
Yes, I've seen Hank go downfield a couple of times. But yeah, someone didn't. I don't remember which quarterback it was that overthrew.
Somebody overthrew Malcolm. I mean, when he busted open.
Mentioned Perry. Mentioned Bryce Kane earlier, and that's. I mean, look, we saw one of the first practices we got to go to see Perry and Bryce and Malcolm.
And Malcolm returned, as your
three punt. And I am Brian. I'm curious about your option on this. I am firmly. Maybe not firmly, but I have moved into the camp of. Keontae Scott should not return punts because he's too important as a defensive back.
Unless
maybe a key moment, where you feel like it.
One of those times when you've got to have something in the game. Maybe the game's on the line.
If
you haven't had somebody else who's a game breaker.
If you like what you're getting out of any of the other options, I think Keontae is too important as a corner to risk on punt returns.
I like his comments a little earlier, Perry. Perry's an interesting thought. You said Bryce is a guy that sort of fits the mold of what you are used to seeing as a punter.
So does Malcolm.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, Perry's just bigger than anybody you usually see return punts, but all three of them just seem to catch it so naturally.
And tackling Perry's probably no picnic after he catches a punt, for some of those guys. So it would be.
He's a bigger punt returner than you're used to. He just brushes people aside. He does.
Yeah, he's fly swatter sort of motion to it. So it does feel like there's a lot of reason to be excited about the front. And again, the incoming veteran receivers, Lambert Smith and Robert Lewis and Sam Jackson.
See Keandre.
Yeah, those guys. We've heard a lot of positive things about Lambert Smith, but I mean. It's like Brian said, there's a lot of enthusiasm about what Auburn has done in the receiver room and what that could mean for an improved second season for Hugh Freeze.
So without Dre Lambert Smith out there, it was Robert on the outside, right, mm-hmm. and Sam in the slot.
Yes, it was to start out with.
Sam and it was
Malcolm in the slot very quickly, wasn't it? I mean, one of the first couple plays they were running with Cam and Robert Lewis out there featured Malcolm Simmons in the slot to the point that at least one of the folks I talked to had a sort of or situation and I do think Robert Lewis might be with everyone healthy. Robert Lewis might be the plan.
Yeah, I think it's so. Probably inside, your slot, but I mean, you've got so many options.
Yeah, you do.
And you've seen. Robert and Sam were inside and out. I guess Caleb was out. He was outside Saturday. I don't know that I saw him in the slot Saturday. I think he was working outside.
Is that right? I didn't notice.
I was spotting for Brian and Jay.
Yeah, did an incredible job.
For the two Brians and Jay, I was also trying to keep up with my depth chart and see how close they were. There were only a few changes I made.
What changes did you make? Tell us.
Well, I mean, I just wasn't sure if guys were backups at like the Will or the Mike linebacker or back up at the field or boundary corner and stuff like that. I think that's pretty much it. I was just a little surprised when I saw Caleb Burton more outside, but Auburn's got more natural slot type guys.
They do.
Was Auburn, I mean, the offensive line looks to be the five
absolutely
it's been
was
that
the five
all spring it's been that, and all fall camp as far as I've seen.
There's no question who the starting five in the offensive line is. It's Percy Lewis, Dylan Wade, Connor Liu, Jeremiah Wright,
And Tutal Miller.
Now, if something happened to – let's start inside. If something happened to Connor, next guy up could be Tate Johnson
and Braden Joyner
has taken a big step forward on the offensive line. He's going to be a key backup this year at – center/guard.
Yeah. Both those guys play center and guard. I believe that really helps their inside.
Yeah, I think Tate went in for Dillon pretty early on Saturday, so you get the sense that Tate Johnson could be a guy utilized. And Hugh Freeze plays more than five offensive linemen during a game. Although you wonder how much of that was necessity last year and how much of that is a preference.
I think Jake Thornton wants to do it that way. I think he likes to do it a little bit different. So I think we'll continue to see that.
You know, that way you can try to rest. If you have a swing guy at – you know, in the inside or somebody who can play both tackles, then you can give everybody a little bit of rest and you can just sort of make small changes.
And maybe your offensive linemen are more effective on the crucial drives in the fourth quarter if you've been able to substitute in and out.
Should be.
Maybe your starting five are more effective that way than if you've leaned on them all game long.
And I think we'll see a lot of it, especially the first three games, the non-conference games.
Hopefully the opportunities will be there,
Yeah, well, the temperature may require it too, because you probably don't. If it's as hot as it could be for the Cal game in week two and the New Mexico game in week three, you know, you might want to be leaning on a lot of the depth at the line of scrimmage on both sides. So and then at tackle, would it be Tyler?
Ronan
Chambers?
I don't know.
Shout it out.
Yeah. I think Tyler would be the top backup at both left and right, in my opinion, but we'll see.
Yeah, I mean those are your backup tackles.
Seth Wilford is a younger guy that they're they like, but may not be ready
Wilford
to go this year.
And Favor Edwin are the young guys.
Wilford is a JUCO transfer, but he's only a sophomore.
Right, he's got 3 years.
And I've heard we heard it again today from was it Dillon Wade? Yeah, it was. DeAndre
Carter.
Carter,
the freshman, has been impressive. And is going to be a player, and I'm not surprised by that. His film was incredible. Just a true freshman.
He's another massive
enrolled this
young
summer,
man.
But look for him in the future to be a really good player for Auburn.
Yeah. What did Hugh Freeze said? He can move some people.
Yes,
that's what he said on Friday.
Oh yes,
that's a big part of the job.
Yes,
on the offensive line,
you can move some people. That really helps there on the offensive line. So no, I mean, just it's amazing how much different. Well, you said you didn't know about a room changing as much in a season. How about in 2 years, the offensive line, from 2 years ago to now?
Just completely.
I mean, it was like, who's going to start last year? Yep. And now it's like, you know who's going to start. And we're talking about third-team guys.
Right. And Auburn hasn't had
having a chance to be really good.
Those guys that you knew as freshmen or second-year guys that were going to be starters. Auburn just has not had that in a while. I mean, it's just been such a long time they've had a good starting five, and then younger guys that coming up that you feel like are going to be good starters when their time comes.
Mm-hmm. All right, we'll get to our first break here of hour number two. Come on in and join us. Anything on your mind sports-wise as we continue with the Monday Drive.
Kickoff on the Plains is coming. Lock in your seats.
Dan Pitch and Brian on ever been a DJ, Brian?
I think it sounds like fun.
I would love to get a couple of sports writers or a couple of the folks that cover Auburn, namely Brian, because of the musings every Monday, but no, I think there's some fascinating musical tastes across the beat. Even some of the younger guys. You know, Adam Cole's big Steely Dan fan. Ferguson's into some wacky music that can we talk a little bit about the music at practice? Because I thought so when we got there they were rocking Wings 94.3.
Yes,
when I got
yes they were.
I think maybe because they didn't want to run commercials during practice, they switched to a playlist of some, you know, some staples of classic rock of the 70s,
90s, 70s,
80s. Yeah, 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s, you know, the couple of Aerosmith songs,
Zeppelins. Well, you know, a lot of that, I think part of that is because it was also Letterman's as well as On to Victory. You had football Letterman there, so it's a lot of the music that was popular when they were playing.
Oh yeah, I think it was something that I think the music skewed a little bit towards
towards the crowd.
I think arena rock. I think it was arena rock staples, and also understanding that, you know, there's going to be a big big crowd there. I thought they made some. I mean, again, offering Bill, I volunteered in the Observer newsletter. I would happily curate a classic rock playlist with some insight from the writers. I nominated you to be the MC for these sorts of things if they ever need. You know,
oh, okay. I haven't done that in a while.
Yeah, but I think that, you know, that was something, and
that's how some of us got started.
Okay,
radio.
Don't please don't, like, I got to be so careful about this, Brian. But like, one thing I thought that went well during the Harsin era was the guy, was it LaRondo? Was he the guy?
Brad LaRondo.
Yeah, was he the guy on the mic during the
MC, yeah.
He was excellent at that. I agree. Brad was
like
a good
that.
Dude, too.
I did like that. The fact where he described what they're doing and things like that.
That was pretty good.
I'm not nostalgic for 2022. Okay? Like, it's not.
Merry Flipmas, everybody.
Okay, stop it. No. I'm not doing. But I did think Brad did a good job as the MC at those things, sort of explaining what people were seeing.
I'm so fired up right now. I'm going to rip my shirt off and go run steps to the stadium.
I don't know. I think that if an MC, keeping it making it a little bit more of a show is like there's nothing wrong with that. And if there are a couple of excellent candidates in this room right now for a job like that.
No, I couldn't do it.
Oh, I got you. Oh, yeah, you're on. No, well, I might put you on the vinyls. I let you decide.
I can absolutely do that.
The idea of
not doing it on a computer, but being able to actually put the record on a player and putting it on there and being that type of DJ, that would be incredible. I know Bill got to do it back then.
Yeah, well, that's why you used to hear shh at the start, because you'd slip cue them. You'd back them up a little bit so it would start just when you let go.
These are the little things you don't know.
Oh, yeah, and we play everything on Wings 94.3 off of the vinyls. You know what I mean? We're still in there switching the. It's, I think for the theater of the mind, right?
Giant, yes.
Does this station still have like a big warehouse full of vinyls from back in the day?
Of course.
That's pretty cool.
I mean, you can never see it though. It's like it's the same warehouse. It's the same warehouse from the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark, where they take.
Yeah.
The,
if you open it, you get. That'd be
same,
a shame.
It's the same one from the end of Raiders.
All right. Well, you mentioned Monday musings. Yes. Talk a little bit about today's, Brian.
And probably a little bit too hardcore, maybe for the Jordan-Hare Stadium Saturday. But I did Metallica, which is great.
They played Under Sandman. On Saturday?
Yeah.
Oh, did they?
They absolutely played Under Sandman.
Oh, I didn't hear it. Oh, well, perfect. Well, 33 years ago today, Metallica released its self-titled album, referred to as a Black Album, that had Under Sandman on it, of course, and I covered that and talked a little bit about the scrimmage and Peyton Thorne and the receivers, all that in my Monday Musings, which you can get on our site right now. It's free. And, of course, it's sponsored by the delicious Uncle Keith's Red Sauce, available statewide at Publix, Piggly Wiggly, Renfro's. It's the most delicious salsa you've ever tried. Once you try it once, you'll want it every other time.
What was the occasion for Metallica? What was the
33 years ago was the release of their self-titled Black Album.
Do you know what happened
33 years ago today?
Now, do you know what happened 32 years ago this week involving Metallica, which is sort of a famous incident?
Was it the accident?
This is when James Hetfield steps on the firework during the show.
Oh.
In Montreal and gets badly burned by an onstage pyrotechnic, and then Guns and Roses. So in 92 they were doing Metallica, Guns and Roses stadium shows, and Metallica would I think they took turns going first, and so at this show in Montreal, Metallica goes first. A couple songs in, James Hetfield is badly burned by an onstage pyrotechnic. Metallica has to stop playing.
Man.
They want Guns N' Roses to go out there and maybe do a little bit more because Metallica had to cut their set short, and Guns N' Roses decide they don't want to go on. They decide that they're not really feeling it.
It'd be tough to come on.
Yeah, well, there was. I think some of it was the accident to Hetfield, and some of it was Axl Rose maybe going through some personal stuff at the time, and his performance has been kind of spotty. But it leads to the fans in the venue, Bill, do not take it. Do not take the
I
news
wouldn't
that,
take it very well, well either. Well, I'm
they,
sure.
Well, they took to the streets and started destroying things, there's a sort of an infamous riot in Montreal that starts with. And Hetfield recovers, but yeah. I mean it's the horrifying thing that happened to him on stage.
Some of the concert footage I found of them back in the 80s and 90s was incredible. The crowds they would bring in, and the different countries they played at, just unbelievable.
Yeah, great stuff. But great stuff as always there with Brian's Monday Musings. Let's get to the Drive Hotline. Man, it was a day, Tex. I'm sorry I didn't get a chance to give you a call back, so I'm glad you called in. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Did you get my text yesterday?
No, I must not have, because I don't think I saw one from yesterday.
When was it that ugly softball uniforms have creeped into the MLB?
Oh, okay. I see. All right, you sent that. All right, so you sent that to me and Floyd. I thought it came from Floyd, and I think I may have responded to him. So, yeah, you're right. There are different looking unis at a lot of games. Sometimes they're throwbacks. Other times they're more throw ups. I don't know what they are.
Yesterday, dark royal blue with black pants with yellow writing.
Hmm.
I feel like I'm watching Elite Coding from Macon, Georgia play in a big softball tournament. That's what it looks like to me. Not to get out of the football realm, but also, Dan, shame on you. You mentioned a bunch of great classic rock. No 38 Special, no Marshall Tucker, no
Leonard. Oh, Southern Rock.
I'm not going to identify who it was. I told someone in the beat that 38 Special is a Van Zandt. It's the brother of the brother of Leonard Skinner, which is why love some Hold On Loosely.
Atlanta Rhythm Section.
Yes, Boys from Doorville, my hometown.
They used to play here on campus all the time.
What's the 38 Special? What's the 38 Special song? It sounds like an REO Speedwagon song. It's like not very Southern rock from the
Second Chance.
No, like come on, is it come on?
Oh,
man,
no.
It's come
on, it, Hold On Loosely.
Hold on loosely.
Hold On Loosely is more Southern rock. It's the other one. No.
Hold On Loosely is very Southern rock. I mean, Second Chance is their mellow one. Heart Needs a Second Chance. I don't know. I like 38 Special too.
Caught Up In You.
Caught Up In You. Yeah. So my dark horse one to be involved though is Mother's Finest.
Oh, yeah.
Beard Eves multiple times.
Yep, you're right.
So I sense a great deal of excitement across every way you can get Auburn information today. Not just today, but when I say today in today's world, for this football season. Does that bother you slightly? Or concern you slightly? Bother would not be the correct
word. If I thought that the players and the coaching staff was overconfident, maybe a little, it would. I don't get that sense at all. I think they want to get out and prove that they're pretty good as well. I mean, I think they're going to be pretty good, Tex, but I think they want to prove it.
Yeah. Well, that's actually the say I got from a good friend that was there today. So I'm glad to hear that. Because I asked that question of a former player earlier today. What was your thoughts? And he goes, hardworking, focused, hustle, athletic, together, all words used in the conversation.
Wow, that's good stuff, yeah.
That comes from somebody who took many blows to the head. So I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait to be in the seats. It's going to be a little warm on opening day.
Thank goodness it's not an afternoon game.
Well, originally on the website for the university, it was listed as 11 or 11:30 a.m. kick.
God.
And I was just thinking,
no,
east side of the stadium at 11:30. That's like baking bread right there. Mm-hmm. That's pretty hot. So.
Oh, it's going to be warm. Anyway, it's still going to be hot, but at least, it's August. The sun won't be completely down, but it won't take at least by halftime. It won't be as bad.
And Dan, I didn't hear you mention any ARS songs, so go listen to Atlanta.
Right. You know what? What's
really,
Bill?
What's smoke from a distant fire?
Sanford Townsend.
Spooky.
They did Spooky because two of the members of Atlanta Rhythm Section were in Dennis Yost and the Classics forwarded the original.
I have heard Spooky.
Champagne Jam.
Champagne Jam. Oh, yes. Ooh. Doraville that you mentioned a while ago. Not going to let it bother me tonight.
Yeah. Oh, another great. That's a classic.
I like Back Up Against the Wall is probably my favorite ARS song. That was little before they were really popular, but. Oh, there's some great stuff. Great artwork, too, done on the album covers by an Auburn guy named Mike McCartney.
For the ARS albums?
Yes.
Oh, I did not know that.
You know,
they were probably a dozen years ahead of me in high school. Yeah. But yeah.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I saw them twice in
lovely Fulton County Stadium. So
I love Fulton County Stadium.
They called it the Champagne Jam.
Yep.
Yeah.
First time I saw them, they
Lakewood Amphitheater.
First time I saw them was at Graves Amphitheater. Yeah.
What was it? What's the park downtown that had all the concerts?
Chastain.
Chastain Park, yes. Gosh.
Yep. All right, guys. Enough reminiscing. Mm. Talk to you later.
Yeah, that's Little River Band. All right, we will get to the bottom of the hour break. Everything's a song. We'd love for you to join in here on the final half hour of the Monday Drive.
Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. See right there, what we did was just during the break, we need to record these things. We did a lot of rock trivia right there during the break. Yeah.
This could be a show on wings.
I mean,
Steve.
Really. I mean, we did from Atlanta Rhythm Section. We started with 38 Special, went through Atlanta Rhythm Section. You're in the Survivor. And we got Chase, which is a band I remember from the 70s.
So Survivor. Well, Jim.
Get
Jim,
it on.
Jim Peterick. Well, you were, because we were talking about 38 Special, and 38 Special and Atlanta Rhythm Section had collaborators who had worked with each other, including an engineer. Jim Peterick was the founder of the band Survivor. He had written. He'd written songs for 38 Special. He'd written songs for Atlanta Rhythm Section, among others. And then that led me into a couple of fun facts about the band Survivor. If there's time, we can get into that.
But yeah, we have calls, though. Yeah. And we'd love for you to join in, 334-321-1390 on the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. And John is up next. Hey, John.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Doing fine.
Can you hear me okay? Because during the break, it was really, there was a lot of static. I'm in my truck. And
you sound great.
Yeah, you sound great to us. Can you hear us all right now?
Yeah, it's fine. Was that text talking about Mother's Finest?
Yes, it was.
When was the last time they played at Beard Eve's? Do you know?
Well, let's see. If it was while Tex was in school, that would have been the early 80s.
Oh, well, shoot.
I remember them in the 70s.
Yeah, well, I got here in 79, and did you know that they were known as the world's most dangerous warm-up band?
Now, that's a great tag, but no, I hadn't heard that.
Because they'll wear your audience out, and then...
By the time the main act got on stage, everybody was worn out, because Mother's Finest just...
What a show, yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, and about 8 years ago, I'm a bass player. About 8 years ago, I was rolling through eBay looking at guitars, and this Alembic bass came up. And I looked at the name, and it was Jerry Say from Mother's Finest. And he was trying to sell his bass. Well, the first thing that attracted me to Alembic basses was a photograph of him in a guitar magazine playing at the Atlanta Jam. And he's lying on his back on the stage playing the guitar. And I just thought, man, that is a beautiful piece of wood. So just a little bit of trivia there from about Mother's Finest. But I think they still get together and play.
I think so. As a matter of fact, as I was just checking, I see tour dates. So, yeah, I think you're right.
Oh, wow. Wow. Well, I'll tell you, I'll put in a plug, if you don't mind, for Herbie Hancock coming on September 17th.
Oh, that's
cool. The Googe, yeah.
Yeah, the bass player who's with him toured with Daft Punk. He's been in the band on Saturday Night Live, their band.
Oh, wow.
And he sits in with the Roots when their regular bass player is out.
Wow. That's really impressive.
It's going to be a good concert.
Yeah, no kidding.
So anyway, thank you guys for taking my call.
Oh yeah, hey, thank you, John.
Tremendous.
Yeah, so that's some neat info. Right,
I know
there.
I know some folks who have seen Herbie Hancock live before, and it's they say, you know, get ready for an incredible show. So that's next month at the Googe. Shout out to the Googe for booking some. I mean, mm-hmm. We had Andy went and saw Del Dazeem last week. They're at the at the Googe, and she did some of her songs from Wicked and other stuff. But yeah, and there's some cool stuff booked for the next year as well.
334-321-1390. All right, so, classic rock, sports, whatever's on your mind.
No, so apparently the guy, I did not know that the band Survivor, one of the reasons that they've claimed that the band is called Survivor is
because... I did not know that. That's very appropriate. It makes a lot of sense.
One of the founders had been, and I was unfamiliar with the Chase band, with Bill,
Get It On was a big hit.
I didn't realize that they'd
been in a plane crash.
Yes, I believe, and most of the band, I believe, perished in a plane crash, and Jim Peterik is the founder of Survivor, and he was, I think, supposed to be on that plane because he'd been performing live with them that tour, and he wasn't on the plane for whatever reason. The plane crashes, and he names as a tribute, he names his next band Survivor.
That is
all covered in the May edition of Monday Musings.
That's right. Yeah, you had that one. You had the
yes.
Yeah.
The Tiger. It was, I think, when I covered it, I think it was like 42 years since Rocky came out, I think, is how I led into it with what you were talking about with Eye of the Tiger being Sylvester Stallone going to Survivor and getting it. Yeah. That's how I led it out, but yeah.
Yeah, the plane crash story is wild stuff.
Yeah.
All right. We'd love for you to join in, whatever you want to talk about, whatever's on your mind. Anything else? Any other big sports things? The Olympics have wrapped up.
What'd you think of the
Premier League begins Friday?
Yeah,
how about that?
All right,
I know everybody's fired up.
Hey, you know what? Season. And I know we've only had a million reasons to say this over the last 15 years, but how about Steph Curry? Huh? How about my man Steph Curry? That was
one heck of a shot.
That's one of the great. I mean, those four shots. I mean, he really closed out and his first Olympics, first gold medal game, and he's out there hitting absolute circus shots with the game on the line. 4 3-pointers to close out. The fourth one is even remembering that Steph Curry is shooting it. The fourth one is a hilariously low percentage 3-point shot, and he buries it. And it's yeah, and yeah. I mean, it's a crazy fact about so France gets the silver. Losing to the United States. Mm-hmm. That's the first time that the host nation has medaled in men's basketball at the Olympics since the United States won in 96. Mm-hmm. Like ever since then, it's been very difficult for. And you know, it felt like a big college basketball game there with the atmosphere. You know, with the home. You know, France playing at home and staying in it. You know, and having the upset watch, Cinderella watch there, but it was ultimately not to be. Steph Curry was not having it in the fourth quarter, and yeah, what a moment he's added to his career, which is already full of them.
334-321-1390. That's the drive hotline, and back to the phone, and we have another John. Hey, John.
Hey, is Brian still there?
I am.
Yeah. Hey, has the Deuce Knight ship sailed?
Oh, no. He just waiting for an announcement or when he decides to do it. Of course, Notre Dame is continuing to fight keep his commitment.
Saw another national guy has now predicted he'll flip before the first game.
Yeah, he has not set like a deadline or a time. So it could be tonight. It could be a week from now, a day from now, 2 weeks from now.
I think Notre Dame was excited because they felt he was going to wait another week or two. But I don't think that has that has calmed Auburn's excitement. I still think Auburn's very much in there.
Okay, I just saw something about some Notre Dame statement said something about they thought he had something major had changed or something of that sort. But okay, well, thanks. Just wondering what the deal was on that.
Well, we'll see. I mean, obviously he's a Notre Dame commitment, so if things don't change, then that's where he winds up.
Okay.
But Auburn, at least last thing I heard, John, Auburn had not backed down and still felt like they had a really good shot.
Well, very good. Thanks, guys.
Hey, thanks for the call, John. 334-321-1390. Yeah, Brian, what's going on? No commitments here in the last couple of days.
I know. Slowing down a little bit. But, I mean, it could change any time. There's still three or four or five guys, I think.
Coaches have been busy.
Yeah, they have.
They have other stuff going on right now. But
it is a dead period, and these kids are also going through their own version of
preseason practice. Right, it's start of fall camp for them.
Yep. So there is a lot of other things on their mind other than recruiting right now, but it's still happening via phone and texting and video conferencing, that kind of stuff. But
I mean, we're about to get – high school football is about to get started.
Yep.
I mean, that is crazy.
Does it start?
Starts next week in Alabama, I believe. It may start this week
in Georgia.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think you're right.
That is crazy.
Because Jason was talking about going to
State. Yeah, I think because that's right. Jason was talking about heading over and watching some football this Friday night. So I mean, they've got other things going on, but that sort of is encouragement, a little enticement for some of the players to go ahead. If they have an idea where they want to go, they can go ahead and get that behind them, you know, before they really get into their seasons.
I'm sorry, I was looking at something, but say that
again. No, I was just talking that with high school football getting started, that's gonna go ahead and bring some more commitments out for the players that are ready.
And you know, it is a dead period right now, but as soon as the season starts, that changes. So those players will start visiting Auburn. First five home games, you can expect a ton of recruits through Auburn throughout August 31st through the end of September.
All right. Wanted to get your thoughts again. I haven't had a chance to hear any of the comments from J.C. Hart today. I mean, I think it's a great story. The youngster, local
from
guy
Boca.
Here. Yep.
Yep. Yep. Good interview with J.C. Excited about being a big part of the secondary now. He's a top backup, I'd say, at cornerback. That's where he's playing exclusively. Yep. He told us today, he felt like he needed the red shirt and work on some things. But he feels like he is, you know, ready to go out there and compete and is ready to go out there and play for Auburn. And I know he's excited about it.
I wonder, is he anybody that's gotten a look at any returns?
Not that I know of, but he's another one.
He's another guy that fits that mold of, you know, a big, fast, a guy that's a fast guy and knows what to do with the ball in his hands as well.
Yeah,
because,
he does.
I mean, you know, he's just now learning what he's doing there at cornerback.
Yep, another guy that was a great athlete in high school, played different positions, and you know, needed that year to redshirt. But boy, he is going to be a really good player for Auburn. Has really drawn a lot of praise from the staff and from his fellow players so far during fall
camp. Yeah, a couple of the players that we're talking about him just say, you know, commented on, you know, how quick he is to pick things up, how smart he is.
Which we kind of knew that, right?
Right.
Yeah, a great student at Lochipoca.
Yeah, our buddy Rick, really proud of him. There at Polka.
Yep.
All right, we'll get to our final break of the afternoon. Still time for you to join in.
I don't want
to
get this wrong. Slack called like a long time ago and tipped us off about
Slack. Jason. Slack and yeah, Slack's known him for a long time, and Rick taught him.
Yeah, and Rick, I remember Slack called like a long time ago, told us about J.C. Hart. So yeah, it's very cool to see Jay. I mean, pre any D1 offer. I mean, just like, hey, there's a kid at Lochipoca who should be in the SEC who grew up an Auburn fan. And sure enough, you know, that he's well on his way to making an impact on the field.
Mm-hmm. All right, we'll get to that final break of the afternoon. Still time for you to join us here on the Monday Drive.
Lee County Revenue Commissioner Olene Price
at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in. Final segment here on this Monday afternoon with Bill, Dan, and Brian.
We had Brian in the house, so we didn't really need to. A lot of player audio today. Peyton Thorne was outstanding. Gave us 15 plus minutes.
Yeah,
of his
who
time.
All was there? I showed you what I was doing earlier
Peyton,
today.
So they opened with Sylvester Smith and Gage Keys.
Oh, you had opening acts.
And then
I
we
like that.
and then we had Peyton. We had Peyton Thorne, J.C. Hart, and Kieron Crawford pop in, and then Isaiah Rakes.
A lot of folks that we haven't talked
Wade.
To before.
Yep. Dylan Wade and Isaiah Rakes both came at the tail end of that as well.
Well, we don't have as many opportunities this week.
I think they're also
we've got coaches though. We've got
Wednesday.
Defensive coaches.
I think they're trying to not repeat any players as well. I think
they've done a really good job. Yeah. We've had about. Probably over a third of the team.
Lot of, especially when you factor in they're not really sending out true freshmen.
Yeah,
like virtually everybody else that they've sent out. You know, they've all been
a lot of new guys.
Best access we've had probably since 2007 or 8.
Yes, yeah.
Pre Saban arriving and everyone following suit with
pre incident at practice that got reported and then that shut it down for the Tuberville year.
Yeah, so it's been
somebody great. Getting tossed onto a table, I believe, is what happened.
Oh yeah, well,
remember that?
I do remember that. As a matter of fact, yeah. Was I the one who reported that? No, that's not what happened.
No,
okay.
No.
Oh no, I was the one who told Bill about it with an earshot of a coach and got yelled at, and I was like, no, I wasn't. Right. I wasn't.
He was just telling me.
Yeah, and you did. Bill saw you. Bill was on the other side of the field. I was like, I think he thought it was. Anyways, that was a long story.
Good times.
Yeah, but as you said, defensive coaches will get Wednesday. Looking forward to that as well.
Yeah, that'll be great, especially talking to Von Trell about the defensive line. So many newcomers, freshmen all standing out. So
it's hard for me not to be really excited about this defense. I think this defense could be really, really fun to watch.
I'm a little nervous about. I mean, and I guess Auburn was in the same situation last year where you had veterans like DJ and Nehemiah and Keontae, and then after that, it was young guys that you weren't sure about, and I may feel
better about some of the young guys than I have in a while.
Sure, but they
haven't proven it.
Yeah, and the young guys last year were Kay and Lee and Champ Anthony.
Right.
I mean,
turned out pretty good.
Turned out to be pretty good starters. So I mean, it's not. I mean, it's
they
probably
were,
it's
a, guys that weren't around before the staff was.
Either. It's a luxury to have experience in your second and third strings, right? I mean, to think about like having guys that were, because a lot of guys are leaving for starting jobs, you know, elsewhere in college football. So yeah, a lot of teams are dealing with young / unproven options after you get past your starters. And I think with Auburn, yeah, you're looking at Spooty and JC and Jay Crawford as guys that you know could be called into. It seems to me, Brian, that these first four games, and especially the first game and the third game, are opportunities to get Kite and Hart and Crawford a lot of playing time. Because, yeah, I mean, yes, Kay and Lee and Champ Anthony need to round into form too, but they're more proven than the other options at you know in the secondary. And you'd love to get real reps in in-game reps for guys like Kite and Hart and Crawford.
And you need them at safety. I think the entire secondary, you got to get a lot of snaps for those players because you have to prepare for injuries. You have to prepare for a lot of things. You have to have the depth.
Terrence Love would be a younger option at safety, I think, behind Bug Thompson.
Yeah, Terrence Love and
Sylvester
and
Smith and Wooden.
Kinsley Faustin was out there a good bit. And I thought he looked pretty good out there as well. And then you got Jaquez Robinson. So, I mean, a lot of guys that you'd like to see and have have some film on them before you get into SEC play.
No, but I think Auburn is going to be – and what a – I don't know if we realize it at the time, Bill, what significant additions Kay and Lee and Champ Anthony were when Auburn recruited them. Because you think about where your secondary would be right now.
Champ especially. Champ was not – I mean, Kay and Lee was a big deal. Right. Kay and Lee was a big flip. State.
Yeah, Kay and Lee was a big deal.
Champ, it was like, oh, you felt like, well, he's sort of a late guy coming in. You weren't really sure. And, Auburn's very fortunate that they have him. So, I mean, I think it's a really talented defense. I think it's a pretty deep defense. I love the depth up front. I think the one thing that I know a lot of Auburn people have been concerned with, you know, for the past few years, and I guess 4th and 31 will never get it out of their head, is they're going to get after quarterbacks. I think they're going to get after quarterbacks when they know it. It's a passing situation. They better look out. And DJ's going to probably send somebody to help the guys up front.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. It's going to be a lot of fun. I know there is going to be some hiccups here and there.
Sure, I mean, when you do that at times, you can give up a big play. But I think they will create things defensively. So, one down, and you wrote it. Today, I mean, if the offense destroys the defense in the first scrimmage, they'd better be a world-class offense because that's usually not a good sign. Defense should have the upper hand early because they can do more things really early than the offense.
They can. I think that's so important, and I don't know if it's 100% accurate, but just from my experience, if the offense is well ahead of the defense in the first scrimmage, it can be bad news for your football team going forward, and that certainly wasn't the case Saturday, especially for the first half of that scrimmage where I thought the first team defense was really, really good. Mm-hmm. But we also got to see some exciting young receivers too make plays down the field, which was good to see.
B-Mats, always great. Let everybody know how they can keep up with everything you guys are doing.
I appreciate that. Check us out at auburnsports.com. You can follow me on Twitter / X and Threads at BMATAU.
All right, we are out of time here on the Monday Drive. We've got plenty of audio that we could let you hear if the opportunity arises.
We talking with our pal Andy Burcham tomorrow.
Yeah, I think Andy is. Calling.
And tomorrow, Jake Crane in hour number two.
Or no, Andy may be here. Yeah. We'll check with Andy. We'll have Andy, whether he's here or not. But we'll have Andy and Jake both tomorrow. But we're out of time here on the Monday Drive. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.